Thank you very much, Yin Chen, for the invitation and the very kind introduction. It's a pleasure to be back to Perimeter in possession of this hockey stick. So I'd like to tell you about some work I've been doing on what's essentially a very old problem, going back to classical statistical mechanics in the 70s and 80s. But as I'll explain, I think some important parts of the story have been missed until recently. So many of us over the last decade have been thinking about topological phases, which are gapped in the bulk, and then often these phases have some kind of interesting boundary state, surface states, and many of us have studied how does the bulk phase, you know, what constraints it places on the properties of the surface anomalies, and so forth. More recently, people started asking questions, what if the bulk is gapless? You know, can you still have some kind of interesting surface states that survive? In particular, you know, is there a notion of gapless topological phases? There are many, many kind of setups where you could start studying this. Maybe you have a topological phase and you drive it to some kind of through some kind of critical point. You know, at the critical point, do the surface states survive? But you know, there are many variations that people have been studying, and I think it's fair to say that we don't really have a systematic answer to this question. What's also clear is that, you know, this is a much more challenging question, and it belongs to this class of problems known as boundary criticality. So what is boundary criticality? Well, imagine you have some bulk system that's critical, and to be definite, let's say that it's described by some conformal field theory, and you'd like to study this system in the presence of a boundary. So you might be interested in correlation functions of operators on the boundary, and also maybe some operators in the bulk. And there are several remarks that should be made about this problem right away. The first is that the spectrum of boundary operators is in general different from that of the bulk operators. So the boundary scaling dimensions are different, denoted by delta hat here. You know, the OPE is different, and so forth. And the second remark, which is perhaps even more important, is that given a bulk CFT, you know, the boundary is not unique. You can have different loosely speaking, boundary conditions, which are fixed points of renormalization group, and we'll see some examples shortly. And then, you know, you can tune between those fixed points by changing the parameters of your Hamiltonian near the boundary. Okay, so this is kind of general setup. Now, as I'll try to convince you, even in the simplest classical stat-mag problem, the 3D ON model, this hasn't been completely understood until recently. So let me remind you about the ON model, right? So if you have a hypercubic lattice, you have classical spins, just length one unit vectors with n components sitting on the sides of this lattice and coupled with some short-range interaction, which I'll take to be just nearest neighbor here and ferromagnetic. And then I'd like to study this model in the presence of a boundary, so I'll allow the boundary spin coupling to be different from the bulk spin coupling. I want to study the phase diagram of this model as a function of the ratio of the boundary coupling to the bulk coupling and temperature. And then there is a slight variation of this problem where instead of thinking about a boundary, you can think about a 2D plane defect. I'll start with this boundary problem, and then I'll say a few words about the plane defect towards the end of the talk. Okay, so how does the boundary phase diagram look? And let me begin by, all the time I'll be in a situation where the bulk is three-dimensional classical, and right, so the boundary is two-dimensional. And let me start with the case when we just have the Ising model, right? So just S's are plus and minus ones. What is the phase diagram like in that case? Well, first of all, the bulk has a critical point, right? There is a bulk critical temperature TC across which the bulk develops long-range order. And then what happens on the boundary? Well, that depends on the surface coupling. If the surface coupling K1 is not too large, then the boundary orders at the same temperature as the bulk. And this is known as the ordinary boundary universality class. And people understand it reasonably well. You know, say this is the spin-spin correlation function on the boundary at the bulk critical temperature. It decays as a power law. The power law is quite different from the bulk power law. Remember, the bulk power law in the 3D Ising model is something like 0.5, and then lots of decimal places. Here the power is much higher on the boundary. And you can loosely think of this as a kind of a Dirichlet boundary condition. And in a free theory, this really would be a Dirichlet boundary condition. And then you can do 4 minus epsilon expansion to understand this, and you get some corrections from interactions. Okay. Now, on the other hand, if you tune, if you crank up the boundary coupling K1 to be large, then, you can begin thinking of the boundary as just a 2D layer, and we know that the 2D Ising model orders. It will order at a temperature which is of order of the surface coupling when K1 is large. So you go to a phase here where the surface is already ordered and the bulk is still disordered. And then this line, this green line, is just a purely surface phase transition in the 2D Ising universality class. As you keep lowering temperature, the bulk will order at the bulk critical temperature in the presence of a boundary which is already ordered. So this is known as the extraordinary universality class. And here, the spin-spin correlation function on the surface is quite different. It goes to a constant at large distance, because the surface is already ordered here. And then there are some interesting subleading corrections. And in fact, the leading subleading correction is has this power law of 6, which is due to the so-called displacement operator. OK. And then there is this multicritical point, so-called special critical point, and again, it's a boundary conformal theory with yet another set of boundary operators. So now the boundary order parameter has a scaling dimension which is much smaller. This is again from Monte Carlo, and loosely speaking, you can think of this special fixed point as a kind of a von Neumann, Neumann boundary condition. And you can understand it in the 4 minus epsilon expansion precisely in this manner. So this is the Ising case, and this is qualitatively very well understood, and also quantitatively we know a lot of this data, or at least some of this data from Monte Carlo and some from epsilon expansion. Okay, so no mysteries here. Now let me go to a slightly more interesting case, which is XY model, right? N equal to 2. So here, the difference is that we cannot have a long-range surface order when the bulk is disordered. So above the bulk critical temperature, the surface can at most have power law correlations. And in fact, we'll have a surface phase transition here, which is a costless-Stouless phase transition. And then we go into a phase where the bulk is disordered and the surface has this power law correlations. So it's a kind of a 2D classical XY model. Well, and then the question is, as we keep lowering the temperature and hit the bulk critical temperature, what happens on the boundary? What happens to this power law? And this question has not been answered in the literature. One possibility that has been put forward is that perhaps actually at this bulk critical temperature, the surface can have true long-range order. We know that in a purely 2D system with short-range interactions, we cannot have a long-range order with a continuous symmetry. But when you have the critical bulk here, you know, you can think about integrating the bulk out, and we know that will give rise to power law like interactions between spins on the boundary, and we know that if you have power law interactions which are sufficiently long range, then the Merman-Wagner theorem doesn't apply, and in principle you can have long range order. This scenario was in fact put forward in this numerical paper, or at least put forward as one of the possibilities for the fate of the boundary at the bulk critical temperature. So what was proposed is that right at the bulk critical temperature, you have long-range order on the boundary, which would presumably mean that the boundary order parameter has a jump across the that the boundary order parameter has a jump across the bulk critical temperature. And loosely speaking, roughly their numerical data, their Monte Carlo simulations, seem to be consistent with this picture. Well, this looks a bit weird, but it's actually quite hard to shoot down from first principles. As I'll tell you, this is actually not what happens. What happens instead is that along this extraordinary line, you don't have true boundary long-range order, but you get very close to it. In fact, here the spin-spin correlation function falls off as a power of logarithm of the separation, and this power is universal, and we now roughly know it from various Monte Carlo simulations, kind of more recent Monte Carlo simulations. And so the boundary order parameter doesn't have a jump across the bulk critical temperature, but just onsets very, very steep. OK, so I call this extraordinary log universality class to distinguish it from the case, say, of the Ising model, where we really have long-range order along this orange line. OK, so that's the XY case, the O2 case. And I'll explain shortly where this conclusion comes from. But before that, let me also discuss the case of On with n larger than 2. So here, the situation is perhaps even more interesting, which is that, you know that for On model in two dimensions with short-range interactions, the correlation length is always finite. So there is neither a long-range ordered nor a quasi-long-range ordered phase. So then from the point of view of the topology of the phase diagram, you know, it would be completely consistent that you could have just the ordinary universality class for any value of the boundary couple. At the same time, it's also not ruled out that you might have two different boundary universality classes, even though this would, in fact, three if you count this multicritical point, even though this would connect to the same phases above and below the bulk critical temperature. So which one of these two possibilities is realized? And if you look at the literature, you know, people assume that this is the situation which is realized just because, nature chooses the simpler options or the less interesting options many times, in many cases. Turns out that's wrong. Turns out that the answer actually depends on the value of n. When n is large but finite, you indeed have the boring scenario here on the left. However, if you take formally n to be a continuous parameter, you can show that, in fact, when n is just above 2, you have the phase diagram here on the right. And the extraordinary universality class is again of this logarithmic character, where the spin-spin correlation function on the boundary folds off as a power of log x, except that the exponent q now depends on n. Well, you might say, okay, this is some formal theorist game with a continuous n. But you know what this predicts is that actually there is some critical value of n below which you have a phase diagram like this, and from combination of Monte Carlo simulations and numerical conformal bootstrap, we think that the critical value of n is somewhere near 5, and we are almost certain that n equal 3, the Heisenberg model is in this. So that's kind of a surprising find. Okay, so if there are no questions.
Okay, just for the extra log, what about the single operators? Do they fall like log 12 to power or just ordinary power?
Singlet operators of the ON symmetry,
yeah, yeah.
They will fall off, the leading one will fall off as 1 over x to the fourth times some multiplicative log correction.
Yes.
Yeah. You'll see in a second where this comes from. Yes?
Yes. Why in the n larger than 2 situation there is not a surface transition as a previous case?
Right. So remember, this is a classical ON model, right? So in the 2D classical ON model, 2D nonlinear sigma model, if you wish, there is no quasi long range ordered phase, right? You always have a finite correlation length. Think about 2D nonlinear sigma model without a theta term, right?
Yes.
There is a finite correlation length.
But this is 3D.
Right. But this is, so if the temperature is above the bulk critical temperature, the bulk has a finite correlation length. You can integrate it out and get some. Other questions? Okay, so where do all these conclusions come from? Well, so you want to study the behavior of this system when the boundary coupling K1 is large, and the boundary has a strong tendency towards long-range order. So in this regime, let me begin by just focusing on the surface layer alone. And if this surface layer was not coupled to the bulk, well, we could just describe it by a nonlinear sigma model, 2D nonlinear sigma model, with the coupling G, which is small, right? So when you crank up K1, the coupling G becomes small. Okay, so if you had just this isolated 2D nonlinear sigma model, then we know about its fate, right? Polyakov has taught us. Under RG, this coupling G runs initially like this. It runs away to infinity, and this signals the appearance of a finite correlation length. Nothing that we don't know. Well, okay, so the interesting question is, what happens when you couple the boundary layer to the bulk? So let's try to analyze this. So we still describe the boundary by this nonlinear sigma model. And for the rest of the system, let's think about all the layers except the first one. Well, you can think about it as some kind of maybe ordinary boundary condition. It will not matter so much, in fact. And then there is some kind of coupling between the surface layer described by this nonlinear sigma model and the boundary of the rest of the system. So we'd like to understand the flow of this theory in the regime when the coupling constant G is small. Well, let's begin by just taking G equal to 0, right? So let's freeze the fluctuations of the boundary order parameter first. And then, the boundary order parameter acts like just a boundary symmetry breaking field, breaking the ON symmetry on the boundary to ON minus 1. So let's freeze the boundary order parameter along the north pole, let's say. This is a relevant coupling, and the boundary flows to the so-called normal universality class. This terminology goes back to classical stat mech in the 70s and 80s. So right? So the normal universality class is the universality class of the boundary in the presence of a symmetry-breaking field. And it's believed that, well, if you write down a lattice model, then you know, for any value of the boundary spin coupling K1, once you have a symmetry-breaking field, you have the same boundary universality class. And in fact, you know, you also have this normal universality class, this symmetry broken boundary class for the Ising model. And in the Ising model, the extraordinary universality class and the normal universality class are in fact essentially the same because, well, you know, once you have an order parameter on the surface, it doesn't matter whether you've broken the symmetry spontaneously or explicitly. Because kind of the rigidity of the Ising order, essentially, you get the same thing. But more generally, you have this normal universality class, this symmetry-broken universality class for any value of n. And there are actually a few things that we know, or we think we know about this normal universality class, and they relate to the spectrum of the boundary operators. The low-lying spectrum is quite sparse, and in fact, there are only two operators below dimension 3, and for us, the most important one of these will be the so-called tilt operator. So the tilt operator is an On minus 1 vector, and you can think about it in the following way. So think about the bulk On current. Think about the components of the bulk On current that correspond to the generators, which are broken by the symmetry breaking field on the boundary. And take those currents, take the component perpendicular to the boundary, and take it towards the surface. And turns out that that OPE is non-singular, and you get a boundary operator with dimension exactly given by d minus 1, where d is the bulk space-time dimension. So in this case, 2, when d equals 3. And then this s is some universal OPE coefficient. OK. So and this tilt operator appears then in the operator product expansion of the bulk order parameter. Well, first of all, you know, if you look at the component of the bulk order parameter along the symmetry breaking field, then it will acquire a vacuum expectation value. So the identity operator will appear in its bulk to boundary operator product expansion with some universal coefficient A sigma here. And for the components of the bulk order parameter perpendicular transverse to the symmetry breaking field, well, the leading operator is believed to be this, this tilt operator in the operator product expansion, again, which appears again with some universal bulk to boundary OPE coefficient. And turns out that these three OPE coefficients are not independent of each other. They're related like this. So this relation is somewhat important. So let me tell you about it. So it's kind of a word identity. And the way to derive it is to say, well, we know that in the presence of a boundary symmetry breaking field, we have a profile. We have an expectation value for the bulk order parameter, which is along the north pole. Now let's do a On rotation, because the On symmetry is still preserved in the bulk. So let's do an On rotation of this bulk order parameter. Well, it's supposed to to rotate like this, but we can also implement this rotation by enclosing the bulk operator with the surface and a current, On current, J on this surface, right? And then you can push this surface operator towards the boundary, right? Because the current is conserved in the bulk. And then, well, we get a correlator over the boundary, where this is a bulk field here, and this J is the current near the boundary. And, well, taking this integral, you must get this rotation. So that means that this, once you take this current to the boundary, it must become a marginal operator. Well, there has, in fact, you can kind of think about it this even more loosely, with less detail. You know, you have kind of a boundary conformal manifold parameterized by the direction of the boundary symmetry breaking field. And therefore, there must be a marginal operator in this conformal manifold. And this is, well, this is the marginal operator, which is precisely this tilt. You take the current towards the boundary. OK, so if we normalize the tilt to identity on the boundary, you know, to make to give this coefficient meaning, then, well, you know, from the operator product expansion, here you know that this correlator is a correlator with one bulk field and one boundary field. It's completely fixed by conformal invariance up to this OPE coefficient. So you plug in this correlator into here, you take the integral over the surface, and you match to the rotation of the bulk profile, and you get this relation. So all those three OPE coefficients are not independent. So OK, so now we understand quite a bit about this normal universality class. This is the case when we have an explicit symmetry breaking field on the boundary. And this is our starting point for the analysis of this theory, where we couple a nonlinear sigma model to the bulk. So far, we've taken the field of the nonlinear sigma model to be completely frozen, but now we'd like to allow for fluctuations. So when the field is frozen, the boundary flows to this normal universality class. And if we allow for small fluctuations, well, presumably the fluctuations should couple to operators of the normal universality class. So what do we get then in the infrared? We get the normal universality class of the 3D ON model. We get the nonlinear sigma model as the SN. And we get couplings between operators of the nonlinear sigma model and the operators of the normal boundary universality class. And well, the only coupling that you can write down is this coupling between pi, which remember is the transverse component of the nonlinear sigma model field, and the tilt operator, right? All the other couplings you can write down are irrelevant because tilt is the only non-irrelevant operator of the normal boundary universality. Now, okay, well, you know, there are also, you know, you can also multiply this by, say, pi squared, pi to the fourth, but those terms turn out to be suppressed in the coupling G of the nonlinear sigma model. So for my purposes, it will be sufficient to truncate at this. The tilt operator is marginal. That's right. So it's, this term is exactly marginal. Now you look at this action and you say, well, you know, you started with something that had an explicit ON symmetry, and now you don't see the ON symmetry at all. You see only the ON minus 1 symmetry. And this is a consequence of working around the saddle point where, well, n is oriented along the north pole. So the ON symmetry must somehow be hidden. And turns out that the ON symmetry here fixes the coefficient of this coupling to be exactly given by the OPE coefficient of the current to the tilt, assuming that the tilt is normalized to identity. How to see that? Well, actually, there is a quite a nice argument, which is, well, let's do an ON rotation. We know that under the ON rotation to leading order, and I'm doing an ON rotation kind of along the directions. Transverse to the North Pole, if you wish. transverse to the xn axis. Okay, so under this Eulerian rotation, my field pi of the nonlinear sigma model transforms like this. Remember, the normal universality class is with respect to a symmetry breaking field along the north pole. So the normal universality class action is not Eulerian invariant. Rather, it transforms by this term, right? You take the current. You know, you want to transform the entire 3D bulk. So you take the current, and you integrate it over the boundary. So this is the transformation of the normal action. So there must be, so this term is not Eulerian invariant. There is this variation. And it's precisely canceled by the variation of this coupling to the tilt if the coefficient of the coupling is s. Because remember, Jz becomes s times the tilt near the boundary. So that's how the Eulerian invariance is restored to leading order in fluctuations. And then in principle, you know, there are, like I said, there are higher order terms here, pi squared, pi to the fourth. And in principle, you would have to restore it order by order in fluctuations. Right.
OK. So, well, now we are in very good shape. Because
yes? So the leading order matching requires s to be that particular value. If I include higher orders, it will not change s anymore?
I don't think so. I don't think it will.
It will only put some constraints on the couplings of higher order type.
I think so. There might be some kind of scheme dependence. But yeah, morally not. All right. So now we are in very good shape, because here is our action. Here is our action, just nonlinear sigma model plus this normal universality class plus this coupling. And the only free parameter in this action is just the coupling g of the nonlinear sigma model. So we can just study how g runs under g. And well, you know, there is a contribution to this running, which we already learned, which comes from the nonlinear sigma model, purely from the surface. But now there is an extra contribution due to this coupling to the tilt. And you know, here is a graph. It's just two-point function of pi. And you know, you can put a correlator of the t in between here. And you know, because the correlator of the t is very simple, you can take the Fourier transform. And well, you learn exactly about the correction to the beta function for g. And you get this extra term in the g squared coefficient. And then the other piece of the RG running that will be important is the anomalous dimension of the n of the nonlinear sigma model field. And this anomalous dimension is actually the same to this order in G as it's in a pure nonlinear sigma model. OK, so now we just solve for the RG flow. And the RG flow is determined by the sine of this coefficient alpha. So if alpha is positive, then G runs to 0 logarithmically. That's precisely this extraordinary log fixed point that I've been advertising. And you can convince yourself that if you integrate the Kalman-Simanchik equation for the two-point function of n, because this anomalous dimension has a piece linear in G, and because you have this logarithmic flow of g to 0, the Kalman-Simanchik equation, when you integrate it, has this logarithmic multiplicative logarithmic correction. And the power of this correction is exactly related to the coefficient alpha in front here. Right? So this is universal power. So this kind of multiplicative log corrections, you might have seen them, say, in the 5-fourth theory in four dimensions, where, well, the order parameter only has a order g, order lambda squared anomalous dimension, but say the phi squared operator has order lambda anomalous dimension, and then the phi squared correlator would go as 1 of x to the fourth times some power of log x when you integrate the Cullen semantic equation. Here, the funny thing is that, well, you know, the engineering dimension of n is 0, and then so the log x is the only thing that you get. Okay, so this is if alpha is positive. And if alpha is negative, well, what we know is that the g equals 0 fixed point is unstable. G runs away from this perturbative limit. And where does it run away? Well, I'll talk about that in a second. So is alpha positive or negative? That's the main question. And well, for general value of n, we don't know the answer. But there are some limiting behaviors that we do know. One is that, well, if n is equal to 2, then alpha is explicitly positive because this s is a real number. So in that case, we know that we have this extraordinary log behavior. And well, that's good because we knew that for n equal to 2, we must have some kind of extraordinary universality class just because of the topology of the phase diagram. And we now learn that it's of this extraordinary log character. OK, what about large n? Well, at large n, you can go and you can calculate using large n expansion. You can calculate these coefficients, OP coefficients a sigma and bt of the normal fixed point. You take their ratio. You plug it in, and this is the value of alpha that you get. So this is the leading term, and this is the first subleading term. and you see that it's negative, right? So for large n, this g equals 0 fixed point is unstable. So there must be a critical value of n where alpha changes its sign. And the minimal assumption is that there is just one 0. So then below n, for n below nc, we have this stable extraordinary log boundary universality class. So that's the conclusion leading, yeah, this is the argument leading to this conclusion that for even if n is larger than 2, we still have this extraordinary log universality class, at least assuming that n is not too large. So what's the critical value of n? Well, I worked very hard to compute this 4 here and in the large n expansion, but you know, not clear that you can trust that. But from Monte Carlo simulations, it's, I would say, almost certain that the critical value of n is greater than 3, so that the Heisenberg model is in this interesting regime. And from, well, both more Monte Carlo and numerical conformal bootstrap, we think that the critical value of n is near 5.
So expression of alpha is the exact expression.
Exact expression. Once you know this OP coefficients, it's exact. Yeah. All right. So now, how do you go across this transition, across nc? Well, for n equal nc, the leading term in this beta function vanishes. So the physics will be controlled by the subleading term, and in fact, by the sign of this subleading term. And well, let's consider scenarios with both signs. If the sign is positive, then what you find is that for n close to nc, in fact, for n just below nc, we have a perturbatively accessible infrared unstable fixed point here. And we identify this fixed point with a special transition. Right? So we know that for n equal to 2, we have this special transition between the extraordinary log universality class and the ordinary universality class. And then the guess is that as n approaches nc, this special transition goes into the perturbative regime, becomes kind of close to the ordered, or this cool, this extraordinary log ordered fixed point at g equals 0, and then at n equal nc they annihilate, and you only have the ordinary universality class left for n greater than nc. And you know, there are some interesting predictions. As n approaches nc from below for the relations between critical exponents of this special transition. And in fact, for n equal to 3 from Monte Carlo simulations that I'll show you in a second, it's already, seems like it's already in some sense close to this value of nc. At least that this kind of perturbative arguments might already be working. The other scenario is when the sign of b is negative, and here you know you would have a more complicated story. In fact, your extraordinary universality class would move off from g equals 0 to finite value of g for n greater than nc. So it would have the extraordinary universality class would become a true boundary conformal field theory. And then presumably it would have to fuse with the special universality class at an even larger value of so this is the other scenario. So here is another way of looking at these two scenarios. So this is as a function of n. This is at the phase diagram at the bulk critical temperature as a function of the boundary spin-spin coupling. So in this first scenario, as you crank up the as you crank up n, you know the special transition goes to larger and larger value of the surface coupling until it disappears at n equal nc. And this is a kind of more, this is a scenario with opposite value of the g cubed coefficient, and it's a bit more complicated. So what's, you know, we need the value of this coefficient b at n equal nc, or at least we need its sign. Well, right now we don't know how to compute that, but we can calculate the value of this coefficient for n going to infinity, and that's what we did with my student Abhijit Krishnan, and that's the value that you get, and you see it's positive, so it's consistent with this first simplest scenario.
Question?
Yeah.
Does b have any scheme dependence?
No. So you know that coefficient, when the beta function is of this form, g squared plus g cubed, the g cubed coefficient is also scheme independent.
So what does it correspond to in terms of
data? It would be controlled, at least in part, by the four-point function of the tilt operator. So that's actually one way you might be able to calculate this coefficient b. That's not the way we chose to calculate it. I can explain how we did it. Essentially, we went to bulk dimension 3 plus epsilon, where on the boundary there is a true long-range ordered extraordinary phase and a special transition, and that people know the exponents of that special transition to first order in 1 over n, and then you can do matching. So that's how we didn't calculate this four-point function explicitly, so that's actually kind of an open problem. All right. So, you know, it's from based on this large n argument, it seems like this first simplest scenario is failed. Okay, so that's all I'm going to tell you about analytical arguments, about the boundary criticality in the classical ON model. Well, the remaining question, I think the main question that was in my mind is what's the value of NC, and you know, to a lesser extent, which of these two scenarios is realized. So let's see what numerics tells us about this. And really, you know, one of the main actors in these recent numerical studies is Francesca Parisen-Tolden, and very shortly after my paper appeared, he studied the when a model with n equal to 3 in the presence of a boundary, and he saw clear signatures of this special transition, and he extracted exponents at the special transition. This actually, there were already indications from 2005 that this special fixed point exists, but because you know, there was no theory, people didn't, we're not sure what they were seeing. And then Francesco went and studied this regime with the large value of the surface coupling, and what he observed was quite consistent with this extraordinary log behavior. So here is, for instance, the value of the stiffness of the system as a function of the system size, right? So he studies a kind of a slab with periodic boundary conditions along x and y directions, and open boundary conditions along the z direction, and then he can twist the boundary conditions along the x and y directions to calculate the stiffness. And you know, in a kind of usual boundary conformal fixed point, the value of the stiffness, well, you know, there's some way that you normalize it, would saturate to a constant at large system size, whereas here the stiffness keeps growing. We see no saturation. And this is what you expect, right? So you actually expect the stiffness in this extraordinary log phase to be dominated by the surface stiffness. The surface stiffness is related to the coupling constant g in this manner, and g grows logarithmically. So from the slope of this plot against log L, you can read off alpha. Here is the two-point function of the order parameter on the boundary, and you see it goes to zero very, very slowly. That's why, you know, in earlier studies, people mistook this for long-range order on the boundary, but, you know, it actually fits to a power of log quite well, and you can extract the power, and remember that this power q is related also to alpha, so you can, you know, extract alpha both ways, and you can compare, and there is matching, at least within, more or less within error bars. But that's not all. Also, people did this for n equal to 2 for the xy model, and again, you know, there is again matching. But more than that, you know, I remember one of the predictions of the theory is that this coefficient alpha of the beta function is related to OPE coefficients of the normal universality class, of the universality class where you put an explicit symmetry breaking field on the boundary. So I convinced Francesco to study that problem with symmetry breaking field on the boundary using Monte Carlo again, and to extract these OPE coefficients, which is, you know, quite challenging, but he was able to do it. And you see there is actually pretty good agreement, again, noting that here you're fitting some powers of logs, so it's a kind of dangerous game. So, but it seems to work quite well. And then, you know, the third approach to compute this OPE coefficients was to do numerical boundary conformal bootstrap, and there were several approaches that that we tried. But in one of the approaches, the so-called truncated bootstrap, these are the values of alpha that we obtained, and again, you see that they are reasonably close to what you get from Monte Carlo.
Should I view this bootstrap thing as the upper bound of value, or?
So very good. So we tried two kinds of bootstrap. One is so-called truncated bootstrap, which is, you know, not rigorously controlled. So the way you do it is you just keep some number of operators in the operator product expansion, and you truncate, and you try to find a solution, and that's what these numbers represent. The problem with doing kind of the more controlled, well, very well controlled bootstrap that people are used to, say, for bulk correlators, for bulk four-point functions, is that so here we are doing bootstrap for a two-point function in the presence of a boundary. And turns out that if you do OPE in the boundary channel, you have positivity. But if you do OPE in the bulk channel, you don't have positivity in general. Now, for this normal universality class, people conjecture that there might actually be positivity in the bulk channel as well, at least if you do various kinds of expansions, epsilon, large n, 2 plus epsilon, everything is consistent with all OPE coefficients being positive. So we tried that game as well, and we get some bounds on alpha that way. But here I'm just presenting the results from this truncated. So let me acknowledge my co-authors on this Bootstrap project. The main hero is Jay Padayasi, who is a graduate student of Ilya Grusberg at Ohio State, and he's applying for postdocs this year. So please keep your eye out for him. And then, he was largely supervised by Marco Maineri, who's now a faculty at Torino. And Abhi Krishnan is my student at MIT. Okay, so that's all I'm going to say about the boundary criticality problem. In the last few minutes, I guess I still have 5 minutes or so, let me say a few words about this generalization to the plane defect case, which a posteriori is in some sense is simpler. At least we were able to do more analytically in this case, and this is work with my student Abhi. Okay, so right, same problem, but now instead of a boundary, we have a plane defect. And in this case, there is a special point in the phase diagram where the coupling on the defect is the same as the coupling in the bulk. So in that case, the defect is kind of absent, right? So then I can just model the system by the bulk action. And now I can go slightly away from this limit, and that would correspond to turning on the ON singlet operator on the defect. So the special point is exactly the C equals zero point, and this point of course exists for any value of n. And this was understood a long time ago. For one sine of C, it was also understood that you get the ordinary universality class. You can flow to this Dirichlet boundary condition, I'll explain what that looks like in a second. Also people understood that for Ising case, say, if you have a different sign of the coupling C, then you have long range order on the interface. But what was not appreciated is that, you actually need, you most likely have a different phase for any value of n when the sign of C is opposite. Right, it would be kind of weird to have ordinary here, and then a special transition between them. Nevertheless, I think that's what was at the back of people's mind. That's what people thought happens for n greater than 2.
So for this case, the special transition point will say to 0.
That's just identity, trivial defect. So how do these various fixed points look like? Well, it turns out that the ordinary universality class, right, that's when the defect coupling is weaker than bulk coupling, turns out that the defect just cuts the system into two and exposes two boundaries with ordinary universality classes. That's easy to understand. If you start with two decoupled exposed ordinary boundaries, then the coupling between them, the leading coupling, is like this, where these are the boundary order parameters, and then people believe that the scaling dimension of this boundary order parameter at the ordinary universality class is always bigger than 1, so this coupling is irrelevant. Let's just cut. That's also what people believe happens for the normal universality class. Right? Again, if you apply a symmetry breaking field on this defect, on this interface, it again just cuts the system into two, exposing two normal boundaries. If you think about the coupling between those exposed boundaries, they're very irrelevant. The leading one comes from coupling the two tilts, and this is dimension 4 operator. This directly for the Ising case, this tells you that this extraordinary universality class on the plane defect will be essentially just two normal boundaries. But for n greater or equal than 2, we can play the same game we played for the boundary case. We can write down a nonlinear sigma model on this interface. And then thinking about the fluctuations of the nonlinear sigma model, and will couple to the tilt operators of the two sides of the interface, of the two normal boundaries on the two sides of the interface. So couple to two tilts here, same coupling constant as we saw before. You know, the way this modifies the beta function is that you have an extra factor of 2 here. And then this has important consequence that now, even when you take n to infinity, alpha is positive. So then you expect that you'll have this extraordinary log universality class for any value of n. Well, you know, people have already tried it in Monte Carlo, I think, with n equal 2 and 3, and you know, everything seems to be consistent with this picture. There is another interesting thing you can do analytically here in the interface case, which we couldn't do in the boundary case, which is to study the n to infinity limit. And in fact, when n is equal to infinity exactly, it's known that the interface has a line of fixed points with various boundary scaling dimensions, with varying interface scaling dimensions. So this was already known in the 80s. So you know, along this line of fixed points, you know, on one end you have the ordinary, you have at the, in the middle we have the special with kind of transparent interface, and the other end is the normal fixed point. So this is kind of cool, right? Because it's very rare that that you get lines of fixed points, especially in dimension larger than 2, especially without any supersymmetry.
Well, what is S and A?
You can think about the order parameter on the boundary, which is symmetric or anti-symmetric with respect to reflection around the boundary.
So is this true for in any dimension?
No, this is very special to bulk 3D n equal infinity.
So why you don't have this physics on boundary?
Well, there are various answers I can try to give. One is you just go ahead and you solve the self-consistency equations in the n equal infinity limit, the kind of gap equation, and you know, there is a solution. There is this interesting solution in the case with the interface, and it's just not there in the case with the boundary. Maybe the more let me think how to explain it. Another answer I can give you, you know, you can try to understand this from various limits, right? You can go around here, say around this special fixed point, and you know, this is just perturbing the boundary, the interface with the epsilon operator, and the epsilon operator in the large n limit has dimension 2, so it's marginal. It turns out to be exactly marginal in this case, which is important. You know, you can understand it from the ordinary fixed point, which is exactly that at the ordinary fixed point, the order parameter in the large n limit has dimension 1 plus order 1 over n. So again, this coupling between, you know, between the two sides is equal. The dimension is equal to 2 in the n equal infinity limit. And finally, you know, you can also understand it from this end. And that's what I'll do now. So now, you know, that's at n equal infinity. What happens at large but finite n? Well, you can calculate the beta function along this line of fixed points. And here is the beta function. We can compute it analytically. So let's work again with Abhi. And, you know, you can match this beta function to what you expect around various fixed points. In particular, you can match it to what you expect around the, you know, the extraordinary log universality class. Remember, we said that here the extraordinary log universality class extends all the way to large but finite n. And you know, that's the kind of RG we did there in terms of coupling to the normal fixed points. And you can match this to the behavior of this beta function for mu going to 1, and you see there is this quadratic 1 minus mu squared, and that translates into this g squared, and you can match the coefficients, and everything agrees. That's, you know, in some sense, this interface case is easier because we have this full control of the large n limit. There are a few other things you can do in this large n limit, which are kind of cool. One is you can think about the boundary central charge. You know that if you have a 3D CFT and you have a boundary conformal field theory, the boundary conformal field theory is described by has a central charge A, which is monotonically decreasing under RG flows. This was a theorem proved by Jensen and O'Bannon. And in particular, if you have a line of fixed points, then along this line of fixed points, the central charge has to be constant. In this case, it's equal to 0 because, well, you know, on this line of fixed points, we have the transparent interface at C equals 0. And that's, you know, you can explicitly check this in the large n limit, that this central charge is 0 along the line of fixed points. Then you can do 1 over n corrections. And these are, you know, you can calculate the 1 over n corrections to central charges of the ordinary universality class for the boundary, of the normal universality class for the boundary. And then remember, I said that the interface, the ordinary interface universality class is just two copies of the ordinary boundary. So you multiply this by 2. For the extraordinary log universality class, well, you have 2 normal boundaries. So again, you multiply this by 2. But in addition, you have this n minus 1 fields from the nonlinear sigma model. So you add this n minus 1 here, and this is the number that you get. Now you can, there is a kind of more quantitative version of the A theorem, which says that you know, the difference between the UV central charge and the IR central charge is equal by this correlator of the trace of the stress energy tensor. So again, in the large n expansion, you can calculate the right hand side. We already calculated the left hand side, and you can match, and you find a precise agreement. That's kind of cool. Okay, so that's all I'm going to tell you about the interface case. And now let me give a couple of concluding remarks about recent developments. One is this, you know, so in our investigation, you know, we started by asking, well, you know, can we have at the bulk critical point, can you have long range order on the boundary? And we found, you know, in the ON model, that the answer is no, that in fact, instead you have this extraordinary log universality class where the correlations on the boundary fall off very slowly, but nevertheless go to 0. But you can ask, well, you know, in other situations, maybe have a different symmetry, have a different bulk CFT. Can you have a long-range order on a two-dimensional defect or boundary in the unitary CFT? And what these authors have argued, based on quite reasonable assumption, is that generically the answer is no. That generically, actually, the extraordinary log universality class is as close as you can get to a long-range order on a two-defect in a CFT.
So what does generically mean here?
Well, there are some assumptions about the normal universe. There are various ways to make the argument. One is kind of following the line of reasoning that I gave, thinking about the normal universality class and fluctuations on top of it. And there is an assumption that the normal universality class is a boundary conformal field theory rather than a kind of a conformal manifold. So for instance, in free theories, this assumption can be violated.
Here by CFT, do they mean any CFT or Wilson Fischer CFT?
No, any CFT.
I think Tinker had some work saying that it's a 2D plus 1D bulk CFD and 1 plus 1D boundary, then it can, the boundary can be, can have no range order.
Who has that?
Tinker.
Some old work.
A few years ago.
Like with Xiaomin, Jian, and is that the one? But that was just a guess, right? So that was like before all of this body of work appeared. Yeah. Yeah. Another recent development is
next. So
yeah?
On the previous point, so if say 2D space was intersection of even higher dimensional space like 4D space, would this still apply?
Yeah.
Just from the unitary bound.
This still applies. Yeah, under some assumptions about this normal fixed point, and there is another way also to make the argument, but you cannot kind of make this so first of all there are counterexamples. So in free theory you can get long range order. Basically, you integrate the bulk out, you get some boundary interaction or interface interaction which goes as, you know, 1/r to some low enough power, and you can get long range order. So definitely, there are qualifiers you have to make in order to rule out these free theory examples. But yeah, subject to those qualifiers, that this applies also on defects.
There are interesting theory that are arbitrarily close to free theory.
Yeah, I think that's okay. As long as in the free theory there is this pathology. Which is, if you think about the normal fixed point, right? So you write down something like h times phi on the boundary, where h is a symmetry breaking field. This h, you know, there's no fixed point in some sense. H scales under Rg, so it is kind of, in some sense, a conformal manifold where the action of the conformal group just multiplies h, rescales h. So in that sense, there is no normal fixed point. Yeah. There's also been some nice work about 2D defects in ON model in general dimension. So this, I think, relates to your question, Sang-Sik. So here you just take not codimension 1 defect, but really dimension 2 defect in the general D. And, you know, people studied this. Several groups studied this problem, and you know, I think, yeah, there's an ordinary universality class, and some of the groups also describe the extraordinary universality. Okay, so I think I'm quite out of time. So let me say that, you know, in this classical ON model, there's been this surprise, some region of phase diagram with the boundary that hasn't been properly understood. But I think, you know, now it seems like analytical work, Monte Carlo and numerical conformal bootstrap all point to the same conclusion. But I'd like to also note that there are, you know, I mostly spoken about 3D classical models, but there are also 2 plus 1D quantum model generalizations, quantum spin models, where there's been a lot of numerical Monte Carlo work on the edge behavior. That doesn't seem to have converged to what at least I expect based on theory. So it's still quite a puzzle. Okay, let me stop here. Thank you.
So next we'll have a few questions.
Yeah.
Hey, is there a lower bound for the defect central charge?
Excuse me?
The defect central charge, if you calculate the various negative number, is there a lower bound for that?
You mean in general?
Maybe ON model in general.
In general, no. I think the one thing about this boundary central charge is that there is no lower bound. That can, like for a 2D CFT, which is unitary, right? Zero is the lower bound. For this boundary universality classes or defect universality classes, it can be negative. So as you saw here, right, it's negative value at large n. So yeah.
So you said you were pretty sure that the critical value of n is above 3
yes.
in the boundary case. One of the things we know from the bootstrap is that the Heisenberg model, the operator in the Heisenberg model that breaks the symmetry to cubic is relevant. Do you think the cubic model with the boundary would have extraordinary log behavior as well?
No, so actually that's a very good point, and that also relates to experimental realizations of this extraordinary log universality class, which is that if you think about any anisotropy of the O(n) group, well, right, so the order parameter n essentially has dimension 0 in the nonlinear sigma model, so any anisotropy that you write down will be highly, highly relevant. So, you know, you can think about, at least on the boundary, so any boundary anisotropy will be highly, highly relevant. So that's one of the issues about realizing this in experiments. You know, if you want some magnet, let's say classical magnet, well, you have to make sure that the spin orbit interaction is very, very weak in order to see some regime where this holds. But you would have the, you know, if you had anisotropy, you would have the extraordinary class where, you know, it would essentially freeze along one of the preferred directions, and essentially be described by the normal fixed point.
Yes, there's no question.